Okay, so we gotta talk about the unproposal scene in season 5, episode 6. It is so well done. It's brilliant on its own. It's brilliant how it subverts the type of scene that it's supposed to be in this loud and very intentional way. But in a much broader sense, the way it fits into the story is like a Stranger Things scene. That is what I find the most profound, the most deeply satisfying. It's like the entire story in micro. So to break down the scene into its simple components, just so we can see what we're dealing with. Number one, everything is melting around them. Number two, in this moment when they're about to die, they're finally honest with each other and it feels good. Three, we have the unproposal itself. And four, the melting stops. So I had a lot of questions on this, but what I wanted to understand most, first of all, was this refreshing exchange of honesty. What was causing them to be so afraid of what this would be like? And then once it actually happened, then what was it? And then why were they making that mistake? Why was there that disconnect? Next, we have the unproposal itself. What is that? There's tremendous emotional weight behind this moment. It's not just a breakup scene. It's not just like, we'll go our separate ways. It's not just we don't belong together. What a relief. It starts there, but then it takes that and it turns that into something else, something new, something substantial, something momentous. And then finally, the melting. It seems like that's being used as some kind of symbol, especially since it stops as soon as the scene reaches its climax. So symbol of what exactly? And before I go on, this video is brought to you by me. The end of the year sale on my Patreon is still live. If you haven't heard, if you haven't seen the State of the Union speech, I'm doing $40 for an hourly one-on-one writing consultation with me. That is monthly help on your creative project, your novel, your manuscript, or just getting writing advice from me. I'm going to keep that sale live until the end of the week, and then prices are going to go up after that. So lock in the sale price right now. You can lock in $40 for the whole year by doing the yearly rate on Patreon, and you even get 2 months free if you do it that way. And also, if you're just looking for a cool community to talk about your favorite shows and your favorite media with, join the Schneeverse. We got an awesome community. We got amazing discussion going on all the time. We got events. We got group analysis calls. We got movie nights. We got arcane watch parties. $2 gets you into the Discord server. And once you are in, you are in. Even if you only support for 1 month, we want to keep you. Link is in the description. All the same stuff applies with YouTube memberships. Back to the video. Okay, so I think the picture becomes clear once you delve into A, the type of stuff they're trying to hide and being dishonest about, and B, what they thought the solution was. So the type of stuff was incompatibility. They didn't like the same music, they didn't like the same books, they didn't like the same drugs. There were also some personality issues. Jonathan did not like the way Nancy seeks out approval for her writing. Nancy was really bothered by Jonathan's inability to be punctual. They also just really don't like each other when they're both on their drugs of choice. But at the end of the day, it was that they lied about their desire to spend time together and really share a life together. Jonathan lied about applying to Emerson. Nancy lied about not being able to visit during spring break. Okay, so now what was their solution? Number one, lie. Pretend all this stuff was not negatively impacting the relationship when it really was. And number two, Jonathan thought proposing would fix everything. And I think it's also fair to say that overall, there's a single premise behind both of these things for both of them. And this is something that Jonathan says straight out. Why would either of them do this?
I just felt like I was doing something wrong. Like I was going against the natural order of things.
Okay, so what is the scene about? It's about a boy and a girl who love each other truly, deeply, eternally, but who aren't compatible as a romantic couple. They have a deep connection that is love, 100% is love, but they don't like sharing a life together. So where does that leave them? This is something that's not supposed to happen.
You're young, attractive, you've got chemistry, history, plus the real shit, shared trauma. It is a curse to see so clearly.
The whole world, their own, and honestly ours too, the audience's too, it's been treating these two characters according to this will-they, won't-they rigid binary paradigm. You're either the couple, or what even are you? If this love triangle doesn't end in the girl choosing one guy over the other guy, then that is just not allowed. Make up your mind, Stranger Things. Are they the blissful, romantic, happy couple, or are they nothing? And the point of the scene is that reality, obviously, is just more complex than that. Just because these two are not suited for a marriage together, you're gonna look at them, you're gonna look at what they went through, you're gonna look at all of what they have together, and you're gonna tell me that that's not a deep, special, lifelong love? Of course what they have is love. What does marriage even have to do with that? And that's what the unproposal is. And the John Coltrane album is a perfect encapsulation of that, at least according to Wikipedia. I admit I'm not a jazz guy, but I looked at the Wikipedia article. And its take on Love Supreme, we got this one interpretation, which is the main one that they talk about, that the album was intended to represent a struggle for purity, an expression of gratitude, and an acknowledgement that the musician's talent comes from a higher power. That gratitude and transcendence, that's also very present in the scene, but what I want to focus on is the struggle for purity. The social world Nancy and Jonathan have grown up in is dominated by this binary thinking. You look at the challenges these two characters have faced previously, and you're either the good girl or you're the slut. There's no in-between. You're either one of the cool kids or you're the freak. Simple as that, black and white. And when you apply that to a relationship in the 80s, you are either on the path to marriage and babies and happily ever after, or you are nothing. And Jonathan knew it wasn't nothing. He knew that he did love Nancy. So in his mind, that meant, well, marriage, right? You just gotta force it to purity. That's what these two have been struggling for this entire time. That's what they've lied for. Those are the conflicts they've avoided, the sacrifices they've made. That's what they turned a blind eye to. It's why they denied whole parts of themselves, denied reality itself, because they've so desperately tried to achieve this ideal, the so-called natural order of things that society has forced on them. This pure romance, and it didn't work. So what now? What do they do? How do they respond? They reject it. After this moment of acknowledging their compatibility and realizing with relief that the love that they have is still there, they can still feel it, it has not faded away. On the contrary, it's just as strong as ever. So Jonathan takes that and leads them both to concretize that love with this ritual that is just as grand as the ritual of a marriage ceremony. Because who cares if it's not the standard way of loving? It is just as real, it's just as important, it's just as deserving of respect and weight and dignity as any other kind of love is. That is what this gesture means. If what we are is that meaningful to us, which it is, if this love that we do have is so precious, even though in this form it doesn't allow for marriage, why not make it feel just as meaningful as marriage? We deserve that. Why shouldn't we have that? And I think the reason why the world stops melting, or, well, to start off, the reason why it was melting in the first place, the question is, what is melting? It is the state between solid and liquid. It is this influx in between state. It's a state of change. And there's also this connotation of nothing feels stable. You feel like you're going to lose everything. And that is the state they felt the relationship was in, that struggle for purity. Struggle is a state of change, of not quite being there, being in flux, being in between, trying to not be in between. And what they realized was that they weren't in a state of flux. They weren't in between at all. The state that felt in between for them, that was the solid state. This complex love that was not marriage, but was also not nothing, that wasn't on its way anywhere. That wasn't trying to be some ideal. It is what it was. It was complete as is. And that was something that they could embrace together. And once they realized that the in-between state, the change state, is actually the place of peace and stability that they have been yearning for, the melting becomes solid. It becomes stable. And they're no longer in danger of losing anything that they had. So the point of all this is that rigid social norms, among other things, make you feel like either you conform and you belong and you are something and you exist, or you don't conform, you're different, you don't belong, and you really shouldn't exist. And that is all there is. There's only the normal and what shouldn't exist. And in reality, we all know that there is a third category. There's what's not normal, what is different, but also isn't nothing either. And we have a name for that category. The name for it is strange.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Or, hey, what's another word for it? Queer. And yeah, I think this is what Will's arc is about as well, and it's what I love so much about the formulation they use in his coming out scene. Because in the 80s, it wasn't just heterosexual or homosexual. It was you are normal, or you are a... I'm not going to say the slur, but that's how Stranger Things portrays it accurately back then. And that word is specifically not intended for it to be like, oh, it's an alternative lifestyle, let there be a thousand blossoms bloom. The vitriol in people's voices and their hearts when they spit out a slur like that is you do not belong. You go against the natural order, and therefore that part of you should not exist. Which is basically how Lonnie feels about Will in season one. He is different in this way that Lonnie deems should not exist, so that's why Lonnie doesn't care if he's dead. So how does Will present his own queerness? He starts by listing here all the ways in which we are nearly identical. And then after all this, he says, there's one thing about me that is different.
I don't like girls.
It is breaking the binary of what's normal, i.e. what should exist, versus what is different, i.e. what should not exist. What's like a faster way of saying that?
Should I stay or should I go?
That is the theme that permeates the entire story of Stranger Things. Is Elle a monster, or is she just a totally normal little girl? And the answer is neither. She is a weird little alien girl who's obsessed with waffles and who probably won't ever quite be well-adjusted. And that is okay. That is what she is. Once she embraces that in season one, in the scene where she marches out all dirty from the woods, wearing the dress but also with the buzz cut, and she breaks that kid's arm, from that point on, she flourishes. In season four, Vecna specifically preys on people who have guilt that makes them feel like, because of their flawed lives, they do not belong, they should just go, they should just die already. That is Max this whole arc in that season. It's also in that season's depiction of the satanic panic in that era. Nerds who have unique hobbies aren't just something different and special to be celebrated. They are devil worshippers who are responsible for child murder, and they must be witch hunted. And this next point, disclaimer, I do not know if this video is out yet or not. There has been some confusion with my sponsors, so I don't know what order my videos are coming out, but if the Stranger Things masculinity video is up yet, then I touch upon this point in that video, that we see a lot of male characters in Stranger Things experience personal failure and react initially with self-sabotage, self-destruction, and numbing themselves into non-existence, basically. And what the arc consists of is opening themselves up to a totally new path they didn't anticipate, and finding that they absolutely still have a place with all the messy complexity and inner chaos of who they are. And now in season 5, they've returned Elle to this dilemma as well, with Nine straight up arguing that because they are different, they do not belong, and they will only cause more harm if they stay alive. So Elle is again left to decide, should I stay or should I go? And the answer, which I have not seen as of the recording of this video, will be a complex third option, will be a strange option, because that is the name of the game with the show. So in short, the show and the scene in particular is just a beautiful manifesto against the simplistic, binary, yes-no, either-or, black-and-white thinking, which is pervasive in this era, but really is pervasive in our era too, pervasive across all of history, all of humanity. And it's interesting, it's not in a moral sense, they don't have much gray morality in the show. It really is just targeting the thinking habits themselves. Stop only seeing the rigid ideal and discarding anything that isn't that as worthless and non-existent, and instead embrace the complexity. To end off on a personal note, this scene really resonates for me as someone who has always had deep friendships that are loving and affectionate and cherished, but not romantic. And to be clear, I don't mean to say that I'm someone who doesn't have romantic relationships. I have romantic relationships too, and those are also loving and affectionate and cherished, but just in a different way. And I felt a strong disconnect with this view that is pervasive in popular media, and honestly in popular audiences as well, that either it's a romance or it's nothing. Love conquers all, but only one kind of love, only happily ever after love, and if it's not that, it's like it's nothing. It's one of the biggest reasons I'm such a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. For us friendship lovers, Frodo and Sam is like the holy grail of loving friendships. It is not a romantic relationship, it is companionship and brotherhood and loyalty and true faithfulness. It's also a reason why I love Across the Spider-Verse, even though Gwen and Miles probably will become a romance soon. I just love the stage that it's at in this movie, which is not a romance, which is just this deepest of friendships between two people who understand each other like no one else in each other's lives. And with Stranger Things, it is so admirable that they realize that these two characters who they had kind of been pushing together Murray style, in a way that was entertaining, sure, but wasn't really fitting for either character, these two could have an arc that ended in deep love, but not in romance. And that's not only not nothing, it's not only okay, it's something that's beautiful and unique and worthy of celebration in its own right. And even more so, even more admirable on the part of the Stranger Things writers, that you can have a love triangle that doesn't end in choosing this guy over that guy. And it's not even because we want Nancy to be the strong, independent woman who don't need no man, it's because, you know what? Love triangles are kind of juvenile, and in real life, teenagers usually don't know themselves and what they want well enough to choose a life partner for life between the two boys they liked when they were 15. And that can be a great moment. It's not a loss. Maturing like that, that's something to celebrate. Okay, we'll stop here. Subscribe. The reason why I'm doing this IRL is practical, logistic, back-end sponsor-related stuff. I want to get a video out right after these last episodes aired, and I had something I really want to talk about, so I just made this video. As I mentioned in the ad, join the Schneeverse. I'll leave the links to everything below. Thank you to all who support the channel, and shout out specifically to Ampersand, you hide your patron. You guys mean the world to me. That's all I got for now. More Stranger Things videos to come. Thank you for watching.